It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast, and always have a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining us with us right now. My brothers from a different mother, starting with Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you, sir?
Doing all right.
You doing bad tonight?
Doing bad? Well, I don't think so.
Okay. Just trying to see if you're paying attention.
Yeah. I want to see if you're awake. Okay,
no,
you're awake.
I'm with you, man. No, I don't think I'm doing bad. I hope not, anyway.
Okay,
we'll find
I hope
out
not
the
either.
Podcast goes.
Okay, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully we'll have a great podcast, right, Bubba Rosenbaum?
Hopefully that's the case, and it's obviously always the goal, but I'm doing well, guys. Hopefully you guys are.
Well, I have a good feeling we're having a great podcast, because Bubba and Kyle, we have a great guest, and only one guest, because he's so fantastic.
Because he's great.
He's great.
Yeah. Yep, we caught up with former Cincinnati head coach from 94 to 2003, Rick Minner. And so Pirates and the Bearcats during those years had a lot of good battles on the gridiron. And he also had a tremendous background prior to Cincinnati, crossing paths with Lou Holtz a couple of times. He also spent several years at Ball State, and then also was with Coach Holtz down at South Carolina for a year after he got fired at Cincinnati. So you're not going to want to miss this interview. A lot of great stuff with Rick Minner.
Yeah, and some Pirate-related stuff in there. He coached with Steve Shankweiler and his own Donnie Kirkpatrick for years. So he has some insight on those guys. And it's a great interview. I think it's one of the best interviews we've ever done. You know, we've had some big-time guests, and it's not that, you know, Rick Minner's this huge guest. It's just a fantastic interview. Rick gives a lot of cool information, and stay tuned for that.
Yeah, and speaking of great information, Bubba, if our good friend of the podcast, Steven Igo, is right, man, Cliff Godwin's got a great, great hire, the pitching coach.
Absolutely. A little over a week ago, that's when the news broke that Dan Rozelle, longtime pitching coach who had spent several years with the Pirates program on Billy Godwin's staff and now Cliff Godwin's staff for all five seasons, that's what he is moving on to the University of Kentucky. And so the news had broken in the last few days, according to Steven Igo at Hoist the Colors, like you said, and that it was seemingly down to three candidates that were interviewing, and one of those was the pitching coach at Illinois, who's been very good in the last several years. And then also George Horton, he and his staff were let go at the University of Oregon after 11 seasons, and one of the guys that had been there on his staff was a guy named Jason Dietrich, who had also had time at Fullerton. So he was the 2016 Collegiate Baseball Pitching Coach of the Year, and certainly nothing's official yet, but according to Steven Igo, that seems to be where this search is headed. And so if that ends up being the case, it would be a heck of a hire, to say the least.
That's great news, and but you expect that from Cliff Godwin, right? I mean, is there anybody out there that would expect that Cliff Godwin would have a terrible hire? I mean, he's top-notch coach, intense guy. So this guy coming in order to fit and work well with Cliff Godwin, you better be an intense dude. If not, it's not going to work.
Absolutely. And no reason, like you said, with everything we have going for us, not only Cliff, just our program as a whole under Cliff. I mean, there's no reason why you don't expect us to make this kind of hire with the type of baseball program we have.
And Kyle, you know, one thing that I love about hearing, not only for our local media and pirate media, if you will, the people that cover the program closely, it's nice when you hear these experts who call East Carolina a power program. I just love that.
In baseball, yeah, we definitely are. Because, you know, we have the opportunity to be. We're not, unlike football, baseball doesn't have a glass ceiling that
right.
We have to break through. We can make it to the highest level in baseball, and we will. We are a power program in baseball. We are a consistent top 15 program, and it's great if you lose somebody on your staff, and you can. And this is not a knock on Coach Rozelle at all, because he did a hell of a job. But if you can lose somebody on your staff and potentially upgrade that position, you're in a good spot.
No doubt about it. And sometimes it takes, and I hate to say this, it's not going to sound the right way, but I'll say it anyway. Sometimes a coach like Roselle leaving and then you get some new blood in there, that might be the difference in getting to Omaha. And I don't mean that as a slash to Roselle. It is sometimes crazy things happen where there might be a different insight that the new coach can come in and give the pitcher that maybe Coach Roselle, maybe, I don't know. But sometimes things like that happen, and you never know. Obviously, we won't know until the season happens and what happens for 2020, but that's going to be good news if that's who the candidate that is chosen to be the next pitching coach. That would be huge for the Pirates.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, you mentioned something that's interesting about football that drives me crazy, but the fact is, you were talking about the glass ceiling, the fact is that pretty much any sport on paper we have a chance to do well. Football is the only one that holds us back, and that's pretty sad, I think, especially when we have a rich tradition of football at East Carolina.
Yeah, well, that's the system, the playoff system, the whole Power 5, Group of 5, BS. And until that gets fixed, that's just kind of is what it is, and you got to deal with it. And, you know, it's unfortunate. And you take somebody like UCF. Hey, you know, we'll segue off this, Dave. Bubba, you know something I was thinking the other day? People talked about UCF the last couple of years and not deserving a chance at the playoff because they play in the American Conference and they hadn't played a tough enough schedule. Yet not one person said Clemson hadn't played a tough enough schedule. But the ACC has been absolute garbage. If you took Clemson out of the ACC, it is no better than the American.
That's true.
Yet nobody ever comments on the conference schedule Clemson's having to play. Now, obviously, Clemson's a hell of a team and certainly worthy of being in the playoffs. They won the national championship. But who's to say UCF, given the opportunity, you know, when they had their quarterback, couldn't have done the same thing? Because you really think about it, Bubba, Dave, the ACC, if you compare and contrast, you take, if you compare, who was the second best team in the ACC last year?
Would be, let's see, let me go through my Rolodex. Would have been Boston College was up and coming.
Okay, Bubba's not with us.
No, I'm with you. I'm obviously in the you can't go by what was in the championship game.
Definitely not. Because Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I think you're making your point, Kyle, because if you look at all the teams, I mean,
UVA pretty much, maybe? Was it UVA or Syracuse? Was it Syracuse? I mean,
they're
okay,
up and coming.
All right, so you take the second best team in the American with Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati could have went head to head with UVA or Syracuse or Miami or
Carolina was terrible.
Whoever the hell the second best team would have been. You know, after that, you take Houston. They could have went. You know, I would have took Houston over Pitt, who won the West or the Atlantic in the ACC. So I mean, NC State maybe was the second best team in the. My point is, the American has been just as good as the ACC, and UCF should have been given the opportunity Clemson was.
And not only that, but what they don't want, and that's the powers that be of football, they don't want the Cinderella story. That is what makes America great. Look at the movie Rocky, for example. Everybody loves an underdog. And UCF was such a great story that if, okay, for example, let's say Alabama or Clemson plays UCF and they crush them, then you could say, okay, well, UCF had a nice season and they lost in the playoffs. But
I'll tell you what,
from.
UCF, I will bet you any amount of money. If you took UCF with the quarterback that got hurt, guys, what's his name?
McKenzie Milton.
If you took in UCF with McKenzie Milton, put them against Clemson, they would have given Clemson a better game than Notre Dame did.
Oh yeah, there's no question about that. They had this definitely the when you talk about Coach Mo and the city speed, they have some speed on that team, and it was unfortunate. Kyle and I were talking, I think when I was driving. I didn't get to see the play live, but Kyle was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God, Dave. Oh, my God. I was like, I thought something bad had happened to him or the house with his wife or something bad. It was when the
when Milton got injured at UCF, it was brutal looking.
Yeah.
So that was not good. But the point of the ramble here was, you know, people didn't want to give UCF a shot because their schedule and will they play in the American? Well, how about Clemson plays in the ACC? Because the argument's made, well, the ACC is a good league because of Clemson. True. But Clemson doesn't play themselves. So,
right.
You know, like I say, I do think NC State, you know, good team. Were they any better than Cincinnati or Houston? No. So, anyway, that was
anybody, the point. Now, anybody knows, and it's fair to bring this up, including our friend of the podcast, David Glenn, talks about it all the time. When you look at ACC football in general, you can make a strong argument. There is so much mediocrity in the conference. And I think the fellow, and I'm not knocking the ACC, I think there's a lot of people outside the ACC offices, maybe not inside the ACC offices, they wouldn't say it publicly, but there's a lot of mediocrity there. In fact, as a matter of fact, we've won conference championships at East Carolina in the last decade. The last time that NC State and North Carolina won an ACC championship, you have to go all the way back to when I was in elementary school. And you guys were not born, and Kyle, I think you were born when North Carolina won. So 1980.
I was a wee baby.
Yeah, that's the last time. State, I think, won in 79 and Carolina won in 1980. That's the last time ACC championships have been won by those two schools. You look at Duke. Duke, the last time they won an ACC championship, I was in high school. You guys were in elementary school, barely, I think. In 1989, they shared a title with Virginia. So when you look at the Triangle schools, for example, and then you look at Wake Forest, they actually won a title in 2006 under Jim Grobe. But you look at a lot of teams in the conference of ACC, they've never won one, or they haven't won one in many years. Obviously, Florida State dominated the conference for many years, but you look at the ACC, everybody knows ACC basketball for sure. I think you can make a strong argument for when you guys say ACC baseball is pretty strong, but ACC football, Florida State's down. You know, that's a team that you need to have. Florida State has to be good for that conference. You look at, what do you think, guys? Miami is not the Miami that we grew up with. They've had some bright spots, but they're not that. You look at a team that y'all think I pick on too much, Virginia Tech. They had, with Beamer, they had some great years, but they're down right now. There's a lot of teams. Louisville's down. I mean, there's so many teams in the conference.
I think a team to really keep an eye on this year is UVA, the Bronco Mendenhall.
Yeah.
With the strides that program has made consistently. He's really built that program up, and it's going to be interesting to see how they fare this fall.
Syracuse, in fact, the old Big East guys, Syracuse is finally starting to – they haven't had anything to brag about. You look at – we were just talking about Pitt. How about a team, Kyle, that has been good historically and been down, but they're starting to pick things back up? What about Boston College? They were a surprise.
BC's good. Virginia, Bubba said, is going to have a really good year with Bronco. Pitt, you know, they'll be strong again. I do think NC State will have a really good defense. So, yeah, there's some quality football in the ACC. For sure,
but it's not the level.
There's nobody elite. There's nobody that's going to challenge Clemson. Yeah, it's nowhere near. If you go SEC, Alabama's Alabama, but man, you got LSU, you got Auburn, Florida's going to be back up, and of course Georgia. You go. Big 12, Texas is right there. Last year, you know, they
Oklahoma.
Beat Oklahoma during the regular season. They won the Sugar Bowl. So Texas is going to be able to challenge Oklahoma.
Right.
The Pac-12 is just a hot mess. There's a bunch of parity out there. The Big Ten, you know, You got Ohio State. You got Michigan. You know, a lot of people, I think, is a bit premature, but a lot of people think Nebraska is going to compete this year. But the ACC, it's Clemson and everybody else.
Right.
And, you know, that's why, you know, and again, to go back to how we got started talking about all this, is I don't think they're any better than the American. I think if you look at the American the last several years, it's been UCF, then everybody else. And I think they're very similar leagues. And that's what pisses me off when people say UCF. And look, I'm not a damn UCF fan, but I am a fan
None
of the
of us
American.
Are.
And when people say UCF didn't deserve a playoff spot, well,
that could be
based
us,
on that logic, you could say the same thing for Clemson. And I know Clemson's, you know, they play some decent teams in non-conference, but their conference schedule has been no tougher than UCF's conference schedule.
That's true, and that's what's frustrating about the whole thing is the fact that can you really, and this is one thing that came to mind when you brought this up, Kyle, can you really help with the old argument, the conference you're in? I mean, I guess we talked about the last podcast about UConn, but can you really help the conference you're in? I mean, we have
well,
to play the teams.
UCF, with East Carolina, we'd love to be in the ACC or the SEC. Nobody chose to be in the American over the SEC or the ACC. It's you're kind of where you are, and but there's, you know, the point is, the American's a good league. I really don't think there's that big of a difference in football between the American and the ACC.
Think about Dana.
Pac-12.
Right, the Dana Holger said, and then you've got, when you look at when he's coming back to Houston, and you look also, how about guys, I tell you the team to watch out for, and I'm not a Memphis Tiger fan, but I tell you what, Memphis is going to be very good this year. I think Cincinnati.
Well, still likes Memphis to represent the group of five in the New Year's Six Bowl.
We need to get, we'll have to get him on Peter Edmiston soon, but Memphis is a team to watch out for. As far as the American is concerned, the game that I have a question mark by, it depends on which team we get. We're going to face in Annapolis and Navy.
It's going to be Navy.
Do what?
We're wondering what team we're going to play in Annapolis. It's going to be
Navy. No. I mean, if they're going to be good or not. I know what team we're playing. I'm saying which Navy team will show up. That's one that I'm not sure.
It'll be the one by Mialatalolo. I know what you mean. Will it be Navy from a couple years ago, or will it be Navy from last year?
Right.
My hunch is Navy
from 2 years
will
ago.
Be back. Yeah. No, I think they'll be back. I don't think they'll be back competing for the conference championship like they were 3 years ago, 2 years
ago.
But I do think they'll be back contending for a bowl game. I don't expect back-to-back bad seasons out of those guys.
And I could see them being like a 6 to 8 win team, something like that.
Yeah,
that's going to be it. But that's certainly with the American. And you look at you were talking about all the teams. If you go down, how about our friends in New Orleans? Tulane is a better team. Over the years, they've had some struggles. I mean,
they made a good hire a few years ago.
Yeah.
I remember having a conversation with B. Pays when they hired Willie Frisch and we hired Mike Houston, and he was just assisting. When we hired Scotty Montgomery, and Pays was just insisting that we made a better hire with Scotty Montgomery than Tulane did with Willie Fritz, and I asked him if he was out of his mind.
Where's Pete Pays when you need him, man? We need to get him. We need to get him on the podcast. Yeah, we need to get him on the podcast so we get the two.
And the thing is, as far as that goes, Kyle, I mean, that really didn't even necessarily mean anything as far as Scotty Montgomery, because, I mean, he had coordinator experience at one school.
Well, yeah,
and
exactly.
Willie Fritz had he had head coaching experience with very very high level of success at Sam Houston State and Georgia Southern. So
yeah,
I mean that's a no brainer.
Georgia Southern, yes. I couldn't believe the argument was being made.
I'm glad that definitely your football knowledge is certainly superior, for sure.
Well, I wish I would have been wrong, but anyway.
Yeah, I'm glad that I'm glad we don't have to worry about that anymore. We have a great coach. Speaking of coaches, you want to go to our guest?
Yeah, let's catch up. Let's catch up with former Cincinnati coach and college football coaching veteran for more than 30 years, Rick Minter.
Well, it's football season, Bubba, and Kyle, we're very excited to have one of our favorite coaches on. He agreed to come on, and here we are.
Very excited to have former Cincinnati head coach and college football coaching veteran Rick Minter on the show. Coach, welcome in.
How you guys doing? Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. We're in the summertime now, Coach. We can talk football 24/7, 365. We're so close to the season. We wanted to have you on and talk about your career and talk some football.
Very good. Let's do it.
Well, we actually wanted to have you on to talk about your career. How did you get, I guess the best way to get started, how did you get started in coaching? I've always wanted to know that.
Well, I think I knew I wanted to coach, fella, since I was probably the ninth or tenth grade. I was so influenced, as many young kids are, by their junior high and high school coaches. So I knew right off the bat I really wanted to be a teacher coach and pursued that dream. I was a walk-on football player at Henderson State University, earned a scholarship, got under the tutelage of my football coach there, Sporty Carpenter. I knew right away, as soon as I went there, I wanted to be a grad assistant and kind of get on a track to be a coach. Didn't know all the ins and outs. Kind of thought we all would go coach high school football and then matriculate into college. You know, he just kind of thought as a youngster, that's how it worked. And then Dwight Adams, the old Clemson football coach, or one of the guys on the Clemson staff of yesteryear, was a Henderson State grad, and he set me down and kind of showed me a path. And he says, you know, if you really want to coach on the college level, do it now. Get into grad assistantships, get to the next level, et cetera. And so I was a grad assistant at Henderson State after playing four straight years, getting my degree, then getting my master's. And then fortunately, my next big break came when I became a grad assistant over at Arkansas, University of Arkansas. Lou Holtz was the head coach, you know, which proved to be pivotal in my career years later. Monty Kiffin was the defensive coordinator, same thing. And I babysat Lane Kiffin when he was like 3 or 4 years old. And there's no story behind that one now, okay? But I don't want him after me. But it was a journey, you know. Then I started at Louisiana Tech and then Louisiana Tech, and then hooked up with Monty Kiffin over at NC State. A lot of people forget he was the head coach there for 3 years at NC State. But we had guys like Pete Carroll and Greg Robinson and Carl Smith and all these guys who went on to become NFL coaches. Many still are, of course. So that's kind of what got me started. But from there, I went to New Mexico State, you know, set out 1 year, became a stockbroker. That didn't work. You know, that wasn't where my passion was. Got back in the game in New Mexico State, finally got to Ball State, and had a good long career there. But that's the timing that Lou Holtz came to Notre Dame. And so I was kind of under his doorstep, and I kept following his career. Finally, I got on at Notre Dame, and once you get to Notre Dame with a guy like Lou, if you don't screw it up, you might get a chance to be a head coach. And that's kind of what ended up getting me to Cincinnati.
When I think about your time as Cincinnati coach, the first name that immediately comes to mind when I think Rick Minter is Gino Gadulli. Can you talk about him?
Oh, absolutely. Gino revolutionized our program. We'd already, really put us up over the top a little bit. You know, we had done a great job of coming in there. It had like 11 losing seasons out of 12 when I took the job. And 94 was a rebuilding year. 95, 6, 7 was stepping years. And we got our first bowl game in 50 years at that university in 97. Then it stumbled in 98, 99. And then all of a sudden in 2000, it correlated with the fact that this is about the time Gino came around. I think Gino was there around 2001, I believe. And he started as a second game freshman. He rallied us twice in the fourth quarter up at Army and we ended up winning that game. He went on to be one of the more prolific quarterbacks in our conference at that time until some of these other guys came along after him and threw for even more yards. But Geno, and he's back there now, you know, coaching the quarterbacks and right where he belongs, right there in Cincinnati. But it was a great get for us. And sometimes adversity strikes people, you know, opportunity opens doors for others. And Geno was committed to the University of Kentucky. And something happened down there. I think it was the Howell Mummy scandal or whatever came about. And that reopened his recruiting. He had not signed, and he reopened the recruiting. And we just kept staying persistent and snuck in there and got this guy. And lo and behold, he became one of the most highly decorated players to ever play the game at Cincinnati.
Yeah, he was great. And you talk about, you know, when you got to Cincinnati, Cincinnati had very little modern football success. And you talk about that build, and I guess it all culminated in, was it 01? You guys won the Conference USA Championship?
02.
Okay.
Yeah, we co-champed with TCU. And we beat them head-to-head, but we still were labeled co-champions.
Yes, I remember y'all beating them head-to-head.
Yeah, opening game of the year. Yep.
And you were labeled co-champions. And I also remember, and I don't think you were too happy about it, if I remember right, TCU got the Liberty Bowl while y'all got sent down to maybe New Orleans or Hawaii.
Yes. Well, the thing about it, and Steve Earhart is a dear friend of mine, you know, still the president down at the Liberty Bowl. And Steve and I always jointly wanted somewhere along the way for the Bearcats to go to Memphis and represent the league. So we had that good year. But we had the year, fellas, where we had to play Hawaii. We played Ohio State. We played these games that were our almost wins. You know, we almost beat Ohio State. We, you know, went out to Hawaii, had the big brawl out there, and got beat 20-19. And our season, and you guys at East Carolina had something to do with this, because somewhere in the year we moved that East Carolina game to like December the 6th or 7th. I forget the date, but it was around the 6th or 7th. Okay, we had moved it from somewhere either early in the schedule or middle of the schedule. It got pushed back to December. And that factor as much as anything, because we had not had great success against East Carolina. So Steve sitting down at the Liberty Bowl, and Gary Patterson was rolling off to like 10-1 after we beat them. And so because we played you guys so late, there was no guarantees we were going to win the game, therefore create the tie in the conference. So I remember Steve calling me and said, listen, Rick, regardless of your outcome of your game, we're going to have to take Gary because he's hot. He's 10-1. They're closer to their fans. And there's no promise you're going to win that game. You know that down there. And we got to get tickets going, you know, that whole thing. So we go down there and win a great game against East Carolina and Steve Logan and the fellas. But we still get sent to the New Orleans Bowl. And ironically, it was like 8 or 10 days away, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks away or less. That game was played on December the 16th or 17th after we were playing on December the 6th. So it was a precarious time where we had to get exams squeezed in there. We had to go down and do a trip down there. And we go down there and lose that bowl game simply on probably because of timing, no less credit to the opponent.
Coach, not to get too far into the weeds, but that infamous Friday night game that you're talking about in 2002, I'm sure you may have heard, obviously Coach Logan wasn't very happy with it. That was dictated by television, and there was a lot of backlash down here in the high school ranks, and it was something that, needless to say, couldn't die fast enough.
Well, there, you know, way back in those days, and I was a member of the Head Coaches Association there, where these Friday night games first started in college football. And there was a real backlash. Grant Taft was our leader of the organization, and he was definitely against it. Of course, TV rules. But we always thought as coaches, particularly early on, that Friday night was reserved for high school football and not to invade their territory. Just like NFL, we think like, you know, we'd rather those guys stay on Sunday and not intrude in on Saturdays. And so, yeah, it was a battle. And ironically, just FYI, I was the D coordinator recently down at Birmingham of the AAF League, and Steve Logan was the offensive coordinator. So Steve and I are still friends to this day. And we've formed that friendship as head coaches in the league, rival coaches in the league. And then we had the opportunity and privilege to work with each other just this past December through April when the league went belly up. So I still have great respect for Steve and the job he did down there.
Can I get your thoughts on that league very quickly? I didn't realize you were there with Coach, but what do you think went wrong? Is there a way that the fellas and I, they're not old enough to remember or very little of the USFL, but I was telling them if the USFL had stayed in the spring league, they could have had a really good shot to still be in existence today. When they tried to go up against the NFL, then that was a bad move to move it to the
fall. Yeah, I don't know what your political affiliation is. I know what mine is. we won't go down that road.
No,
we agree with you, Coach.
But your fellow Donald Trump spoiled it for everybody.
Yeah,
he really was indeed the ringleader, you know, that challenged the league. And they kind of won, but they lost. And it really was all about trying to begin to go head-to-head. And that was never the intention. But to answer your question, the reason the AAF did not make it, because let me tell you, it was really, really well designed. It was very player-friendly. Charlie Ebersole and Bill Polian did a great job on the football side of things, making it a really attractive place to try to, you know, reach your goals and your dreams as the guys who were on the fringe of being NFL football players. And it really took hold. We did a great job. The reason it failed was just poor, poor business management. It's just as that simple. They'd bring enough money to the table, and hooked up perhaps with the wrong owner. I know the guy resides in North Carolina there, Tom Dunham, but he didn't have the same passion for the product that Charlie and Bill had. And once he gets in there, like any businessman, and sees how the things are being run, and you know, if you just make a blueprint for business, then it was probably a failed business endeavor. And he cut his losses abruptly and put us all out on the streets. You know, very, very unfortunate. I'd like to have seen them finish the league one season and play it out, get a champion, go on, and then reevaluate, reassess, you know, after one season, whether you come back or not, who knows. But the XFL with Vince McMahon is up next. And it actually, from the fans' point of view, it'll be a rinse repeat of what we just did. It'll look good. It'll be a good product. And I really think Vince is going to bring a whole lot more money to the table, so it's got a chance to survive.
And you know, Vince is a Pirate. He's an East Carolina graduate.
Oh, is that right? I never knew that.
He sure is. But, him and his wife, Linda, both.
1969 graduate.
Wow, great. Good for him. But I've always had great respect for the East Carolina program. I've known, you know, some of the ADs. Mike Kamrick and I were good friends while he was the AD there. Some of the other guys in the administration there have come through there, been good friends of mine. And you know, the guys on your staff currently, so many of them are friends of mine. Skip Holtz was a good friend. I mean, I've just had a great affinity for East Carolina. It started with me playing Steve all the time and the rivalry we developed between Cincinnati and East Carolina. And it was a very friendly, intense rivalry. And but I've always had great respect. I mean, I coached at NC State. I coached at South Carolina. So I was a little bit closer to Greenville and what goes on down there. But that was a job that was, in my opinion, so much further ahead in football growth and development than even what our job was at Cincinnati, just due to fan support and the money invested.
I want to ask you, Coach, as far as when you're talking East Carolina with the current head coach Mike Houston, we've had three down years. Do you, when you're talking about the coaching staff, do you see things getting better for us? We're praying that we can right the ship.
Oh, I think it'll be outstanding. Number one, you're in a tough conference. Okay, that American conference is you're in American, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. But that's a tough league, and it's getting better all the time. You know, Cincinnati is already back up at the top. You got Central Florida sitting down here, about an hour away from where I'm at right now. You got South Florida. You got everybody over on the east. It's pretty darn tough, but. I think the coaching hire, I don't know Houston very well myself, but certainly know some of the guys that he surrounded himself with. I read up on his bio last night just to not be totally void, and the guy's had a heck of a run now. It's ironic. I'm down here at the little D2 Florida Tech school for the last two seasons, running this defense down here for my buddy Steve Englehart until I took that AAF job. And ironically, we got in the playoffs, and we went to Lenoir Ryan to play a game of the first round of the playoffs and got our butts beat because it was a really, really good football team. But those guys over there still talk about Houston, you know, that some of their successes go all the way back to when he was there. And then he went off and did a bunch of other things. But, you know, anytime you have the run he did at James Madison, you're a good football coach. I mean, you get in there and win a national title, take the next year or two to the brink. You hire good guys. You let them coach. You know, young, like Steve Earhart or Steve Englehart down here at Florida Tech did. These guys like Mike who are willing to hire guys like Steve Shankweiler, Kirkpatrick, Bobby Trott. In other words, older, mature guys who've been around the block a little bit. They're not threatened by those guys. They're secure in their own skin. Tells you a whole lot about the head coach, to be honest with you. And so I think there's wealth and knowledge and experience and age, and you've got a heck of a good-looking staff down there that will come down there and get after. And I think it'll change the complexion of what their plight has been the last two or three years.
What are your thoughts on Donnie Kirkpatrick and Steve Shankweiler, two guys that this is their Shank's fourth stint at East Carolina and
fourth
the third
time, yeah.
for Donnie Kirkpatrick. What are your thoughts on those
I
two
know
guys?
Steve a lot more personally than I know Donnie. I certainly know Donnie as a friend. We've never worked together. We've had mutual friends that we've worked with. I can certainly just speak positively. He's got a tremendous resume. You look at his record. And I think when guys come back to familiar places, they're so much better because of familiarity. But if you just look at his track record offensively, he's put together dynamic offenses over his career. He was a head coach at Chattanooga and keeps rebounding. And guys, you know, that we've all kind of been there, done that, and been at some marquee programs, and then you're willing to go, not step down, but take a less profile job, if you will, and just keep on rolling where your family enjoys it no matter where you live. That's what Donnie is. I mean, he just makes the best of every situation that he's in, makes the team better. He's got great communication skills, obviously a great teacher of developing quarterback plays and the players around him on offense. Shank, I know very well because I've competed against Shank for a number of years. We have great mutual friends like Mike Cassidy, who spent some time over there at East Carolina. Mike and I coached together three times. Bill Lewis and I coached together at Notre Dame. Bill Lewis had Steve Shankweiler. See, so we got a lot of really, really connected, connect the dots there. But Steve worked for me. Okay, once those guys got let go under Logan down there back in those days, I turned right around and hired. I had an offensive line opening. And I knew the minute Steve Shankweiler was available that I would try my best to reach out and try to connect, and it happened. And even though it was only 1 year, I really enjoyed our time together. And then when I get hired as the D coordinator my first year after Cincinnati, see, the day I get fired at Cincinnati, I won't ever forget this, the first guy to call me was Lou Holtz. Again, I worked for him three times, and when he calls me, it was to console me a little bit as being a head coach. Hey, hang in there, et cetera, et cetera. And then left the door open that, hey, there might be changes down here that might interest you at South Carolina, et cetera. And I ended up taking the job down there, to make the story short. But I instantly recommended to him and Skip, Steve Shankweiler, as to be the offensive line coach at South Carolina. And that worked out. So I ended up working with Shank side by side two different years, but two different universities. And then, of course, after that one season, I'm thinking we're down at Columbia for a few years. Lou up and retires. And then that's when Skip got the job at Greenville and brought Shank with him, you know, which was, what, trip number three for him. And so Steve Shankweiler is an extremely great football coach, extremely high character, loyal assistant, tremendous family man, husband, father, et cetera. And a good friend to so many guys out there. Just a tremendous coach and a tremendous teacher.
Coach, I wanted to ask you, back on your career, I wanted to ask you about a specific game that I remember watching. Can you talk about when you guys upset Wisconsin and Ron Dayne?
Oh, yeah. I tell people this, and I believe this as a head coach. just part of my philosophy of coaching, I believe that it's the job of the head coach to lay the plan out for the team of how we're going to win the game, how we're going to play the game. And that means how's the offense and the defense and the special teams are going to intertwine themselves in preparation, what you're up against, what are their strengths, what are their weaknesses, and put the whole team on the same page. Some coaches do better jobs of this than others, as I've worked for a whole lot of guys. But that Friday night, I've laid out the plan that had to happen for us to pull this off. They were ranked number 8. They had Ron Dayne. They were a Big Ten football team. We could hang in there with kind of like fast teams, but we were concerned, could we hang in there with a big, strong, physical team that you might have trouble stopping the run game, particularly with a freight train back there named Ron Dayne. And so you just laid it out of exactly how it had to play out. We were going to play rope-a-dope defense, which means bend, don't break, just don't let them score. We had to be opportunistic on offense because we weren't going to get many chances. I looked right at the running back on Friday night and said, Fook, you have to break one run for us. One run you have to break. We have to have an X play. And I'll be darned if he didn't run a 51-yard touchdown run against that secondary, cut against the grain, et cetera. But Ron Dayne got the ball twice, or the offense did, twice down inside the 10-yard line. Once we made him fumble going into the end zone, which saved us once, and once we held him to 3 points. So those two trips, now that might have been 140 yards of rushing. You know, they got him down there both times. But we hung in there, and we just played great opportunistic. Deontay Kenner scored on a 5-yard quarterback draw. 7 minutes to go. We were up 17-12. We kicked a field goal, put us in a position where they had to score the touchdown, and they methodically got on the ball at about 7.5 or so minutes to go. And Barry Alvarez was on the other side, and Barry and I are good friends. And they just started getting in the huddle, out of the huddle, in the huddle, out of the huddle. There was no fast tempo at all. And they just thought they could run the ball all the way down the field and just run the clock out and score at the same time. And I thought this early, they just used up a little bit too much time. And now they're on the 20, 19, 18, having to throw the ball in the end zone, and we end up holding them off for, at that point in time, one of the greatest wins in Cincinnati history.
Yeah, I remember watching that game and just remember being just ecstatic for a fellow, you know, Conference USA mate at the time.
Oh, absolutely.
To beat Wisconsin.
But, you know, the kids come and storm the field. They tore the goalpost down. They drug it down the street. They do what you see big programs do, and you loved it. I don't care what it costs to replace the goalpost. You know, that's not my problem. But you just loved it that those kids got that excited. And since those days, and that was in 99, but ironically, this was our challenge. We almost beat Ohio State up there. We played the following week. We played Wisconsin at home and beat them. We, if you remember, we did not win a Conference USA game that year.
I didn't remember that. I do remember you guys didn't go to a bowl that year, but I did
right.
not realize you didn't.
I mean, we
wow.
Got beat against Troy State, which probably was my fault for us trying to save some things offensively, and we just waited too long. We beat Wisconsin, and we almost pulled it off against Ohio State, and Jimbo Fisher was my offensive coordinator. And it was that game at Ohio State that ultimately got Jimbo the job the next year at LSU as the offensive coordinator. And Nick told me that because he watched that game and broke us down while he's looking at Ohio State. He just says, wow, look at this offense. You guys just put 500 yards on Ohio State, even though he lost, you know, a close ball game. But that's where Nick made the note, I need to talk to Jimbo Fisher someday. That's kind of what he told me when he was contacting me, because no coach from Michigan State, remember, followed Nick to LSU, so he had to start from scratch building an entire staff. I was fortunate at Cincinnati. Now, I had a lot of guys come through there. I think I knew how to hire them. I really did. I think I had a knack for hiring people. I didn't keep some of them very long, but I ended up with Rex Ryan for 2 years, Mike Tomlin for 2 years, John Harbaugh for 3 years, Jimbo for one. You know, I had Rick Smith right there, your local East Carolina guy on my staff for two. Had a bunch of good guys. I mean, you're only as good as the people you surround yourself with, and I was fortunate to surround myself with these kind of guys.
Man, talk about Rick Smith. He's one of my favorite people. What? That guy is a straight shooter. There's no BS, no coach speak about him. He tells it like it is.
Well, I hired Rick. What happened with Rick now, he was at Tulane. He had moved around just like we all do. He had moved around, landed at Tulane, and when Tommy Bowden left Tulane to come over there toward Clemson, somehow Rick got left out of that picture and so therefore was looking for a job. And we just played those guys 2 years with Rick running the defense, and I thought they were outstanding. They were good. They played hard. They're not overly complicated. He's a great secondary coach. The kids play the ball in the air. They hit. They strike. They're good tacklers. He's a good fundamental guy. And so I jumped at the opportunity because I was looking at that time for a new defense, an entire defensive staff. Okay, so I had Greg Hudson, another name, on my staff at that time, coaching my tight ends and running backs. And when I hired Rick was when HUD flipped over and coached the linebackers, because that's what HUD played at Notre Dame as a football player, was linebacker. He had just moved into the offensive side with Skip Holtz. I'm talking about Skip up at UConn. Okay.
Right.
But by the time they get to East Carolina, then HUD and Rick are working together, but HUD's the defense coordinator. But when I was there at Cincinnati, Rick was the D coordinator and HUD was working under him as the linebacker coach. Mike Tomlin was the corner coach, and Keith Willis was the D-line coach. It was an outstanding staff. Kept that group intact for 2 years, and then they all split at the same time. That was the toughest thing about our job at Cincinnati, was retention of good coaches, because we were a non-BCS team at the time, and there was always greener pastures if you had great coaches on your staff, which is what I did. But Rick is a meticulous teacher. He's a devoted football coach. His kids know what they're doing. They play hard. They play well. They're fundamentally good. And while they're not overly flashy, they're not overly dynamic, they play a little bit deep to short on the back end. They didn't give up many points.
Indeed. We always enjoyed Rick as a secondary coach and also his time as defensive coordinator under Ruffin McNeil. I don't think he got enough credit for the job he did here. Coaching defense with an air raid offense isn't easy. And,
definitely not. I was with the Philadelphia Eagles and Chip Kelly.
Yeah. So, Rick's a heck of a coach and a great person. We just can't say enough good things about Rick. I'll tell you a quick little anecdote about Rick Smith. He coached briefly with Scotty Montgomery when he took over. And Rick, after that one season, was on local radio, was trying to be by the books, and, he's doing his best. And just ended up getting so frustrated. And finally just broke down on radio talking about Scotty's problem is he doesn't know how to run practice. You got to do it live. You got to be physical. It was good stuff.
Well, we didn't have any trouble seeing eye to eye on those things because we're both, of course, defensive-type guys. We tried to run more physical-type practices. So I think the program we ran, and I left Rick alone. I was by that time I stayed 10 years at Cincinnati the first year and the last 2 years. So that's three of the seven. I was strictly on defense, okay? The middle seven, I was a little bit more in the middle and even tilted on offense. Like all of us defensive guys, we want to stick our nose in there and try to learn what's going on, and had fun kind of hanging out with the offense a little bit more at that time. But that was when Rick was there, because you trusted a guy like him to run the defense to the nth degree, and he did a great job, particularly with that staff. I mean, you look at those guys and the careers they went on to have or are still having, Rick Smith and Mike Tomlin coaching the back end, okay, the Mike Tomlin who's with the Steelers, okay, and then you had HUD running the linebackers, and that was really him getting back to his first passion, which was coaching linebackers, and then a really, really up-and-coming great coach was in Keith Willis, who had played in the NFL for like 12 or 14 years with the Steelers and was just learning how to coach and a great person. Now his kids have already grown up and become good players,
Coach, during this interview, you've talked multiple times about your close association with Lou Holtz going back to Arkansas in 1978. So can you just talk about Coach Holtz, obviously college football legend, and what you learned from him, I can only imagine. But if you can kind of give us a Cliff Notes version, and he's just or maybe a story or two, because he was such a tremendous motivator.
Well, you know, I go down in history as Lou's last ever defensive coordinator, which I have great pride in. I worked for him three times. He hired me as a young grad assistant and at Arkansas in 1978, working directly under Monty Kiffin. And, of course, Lou was the head coach. And then the next time he hires me was at Notre Dame in 1992-93 as the defensive coordinator. Now, the persistent story there was now he got to Notre Dame now in 1986, and I was at Ball State beginning to coach really good defenses. And the thing that frustrated me, and maybe it was the master plan all along and it paid off in the long run, I knocked on Lou's door every year because he had an opening every year on defense, some type, whether it was a coordinator slash linebacker job. I mean, 86, I was knocking on the door, 87, 88, 89, 90, 91, 92. So I got tired of being turned down. I mean, just flat out rejection. Okay. I mean, couldn't be more plain than that. Thinking he's not looking, that he's not listening, you know, that type of thing. But he was always following my career, and we were amassing good numbers on defense at Ball State. And so finally I changed my tactics. I had a chance to interview at Navy and Colorado State after the 91 season. And that was Earl Bruce at Colorado State and George Chomp over at Navy. Now, the unique thing about those two guys, they were with Lou on Woody Hayes' 1968 Ohio State staff, right? So Lou knew these two guys, and he had worked with them before. So I won't ever forget it. I called Coach after I got back from those two interviews, right, back-to-back interviews. And so I called him, and I said, Coach, this is Rick Minner. And he instantly starts talking, hey, Rick, I don't have a job right now, you know, that whole deal. And I said, no, Coach, I'm not calling you to ask for a job. He said, okay, what can I do for you? And I said, Coach, I need your advice. Well, see, now you play up to him a little bit, right? So I said, I've got two opportunities here between Navy and Colorado State, George Chomp, Earl Bruce. I wanted your opinion. See, now I'm playing up to him. I'm saying, I wanted your opinion on what I should do. He said, hey, Rick, I believe if it were me, I'd just stay right where I'm at. I'm thinking, why in the world is he saying that to me? Because I've got a job opportunity coming out of Ball State. And he says, Rick, I've been following your career, and you're going to be the next guy that I bring to Notre Dame. Okay?
Thank you.
He says, you're going to be the next guy I bring to Notre Dame. And I don't want to take you off of their staff if you've just been there 1 year. So I'm thinking, okay, this sounds cool. So I get on the horn, right, and I start calling all my guys who work for Lou, and I say, can I believe Lou if he tells me this? And they said, yes, I think you can. So as it turned out, I didn't get either job. But they also reaffirmed to me that Lou would stick to his job or stick to his word. And I'll be darned if I didn't end up the coordinator at Notre Dame the next year. Okay. So that persistence of staying at Ball State 7 years, in which I grew highly frustrated over that time of not getting myself out of there, but I just kind of stuck to the grind and kept building my own little defensive package, got me to Notre Dame. And then once you're there, if you don't screw it up, you're probably going to get a head coaching job. And so I worked for Lou for 2 years, and we ended up going to the Cotton Bowl both years. The Cincinnati job came open. We had our hearts broken, you know, in the 93 season where we beat Florida State, and Lou was absolutely at his best in the biggest of games. You know, when we'd play Michigan or when we'd play Penn State or when we'd play a team like Florida State, he was at his best. One, he loved the underdog role, if we were the underdog. And but I'll tell you what, now, if you're playing Purdue or you're playing Navy or you're playing somebody you're supposed to beat at Notre Dame, oh man, it was like hell week. Okay. And so it wasn't fun to be around when you're playing those kind of teams, but when you were playing the teams that were the national spotlight games, Lou Holtz was, I'm telling you, at the top of his game. So we beat Florida State, you remember, with Charlie Ward and the boys at quarterback. And we lost the very next week to Boston College in that heartbreaker where they hit that last second field goal. And in between that game and the bowl game, I took the Cincinnati job. I just thought it was, one, a great opportunity. Two, it was time for me to go. It really was. And so I ended up getting kind of booted out, saying, hey, Rick, you just need to go on down and coach the, you know, just go coach Cincinnati. You can't serve two masters. That was always Lou's philosophy, except with Skip, okay? Because Skip got a job at the same time, right? Blood's thicker than water. But so I take off and go coach, you know, I mean, I don't do anything because it's in December. But I'm putting the staff together at Cincinnati. I get invited to the Cotton Bowl just as a guest. So I go down there hanging out in a friggin' sweater and slacks and in a hotel room. And as soon as I get there, the coaches say, well, we've asked Coach, you know, if you really want to be in the press box. And he says, okay. I said, okay, I'll be in the box. And so I had already put the game plan in before I got the Cincinnati job. I didn't get it till about December the 19th. And I already put the whole plan in. And keep in mind, we had already played A&M. This was our back-to-back seasons of playing A&M. So we already had a good plan in. And I'd already practiced with the team for 2 weeks when I got that job. And Lou said, take a hike. And but once we get there and get into the game, they drive the ball down the field on our defense while I'm just the observer in the press box in my little Gucci sweater. Okay, I'm not even dressed out like Notre Dame coaches. I'm just up there as a guest. And as soon as that drive is over, I'm on the headsets, right? And Lou Holtz jumps on the phone and he says, hey, get me Rick Minner on the phone up there. So I called the rest of the game, right? And we ended up winning the game, and not because of that, because our kids played their tails off, and we ended up beating Texas A&M. And unfortunately, we lost the vote that year on the split national title hopes, right? We had beaten Florida State head-to-head. We both end up with one loss. They got both polls where we thought they should have got maybe the AP, and we should have got the coaches if the coaches put themselves in our position. But it didn't work that way. So I went ahead and took the Cincinnati job, stayed 10 years. And like I said, the first guy to call me the day I got fired was Lou Holtz. And it was really a very, very meaningful and phone call, because what I really wanted to do after I got fired as the head coach of Cincinnati, I really wanted to try to get in the NFL. That's kind of what a lot of us try to do. But when he calls me and says, I need you down here, I could not turn the man down. I owed him everything. He hired me as a young GA. He gave me my break at Notre Dame and helped launch me into my head coaching career. And now the guy's asking me for help, and I went down there and gave it my best shot. We went 6-5. We had a top 25 defense. And Mike McGee, you remember him, right, was the AD. And Mike even told me, because we had a press conference on Monday to announce Lou's retiring. The next day we had a press conference announcing Steve Spurrier as the new head coach. And the AD, Mike McGee, and I are good friends. And he says, Rick, let me tell you, I made one phone call 3 weeks ago when Coach Holtz told me in private that he was probably going to resign at the end of the season. And he said, I made one phone call, because that was the season, right, that Steve was setting out after the Washington Redskins debacle. And it was Steve, because he had him over at Duke right back in the 80s. And he was the same AD at Duke at that time. And he says, he asked Steve, if this job opens in a few weeks, would you have interest? And Steve said, of course, yes. And he told me that story. And he says, well, you know, I just want you to know, had Steve not shown interest, you would have at least been the first candidate we would have talked to about taking over the job. And I said, well, that doesn't help me today, right? But I said, I appreciate the compliment. But I would have looked forward, to be honest with you, of still working for Steve Spurrier, but he went another direction. Ironically, hired your own John Thompson, who you guys had just let go. He came down to Columbia to take over my job. And then I went right back to Notre Dame, worked for Charlie Weiss. But I was very impressionable as a young coach working for Lou at Arkansas. So that put in line my philosophy as a young coach. When I went to Notre Dame, I worked for him for 2 years. Now I'm setting my own blueprint for someday I might be a head coach. So Lou had more influence on me than any other guy in my entire career. I tried to be not necessarily like him, because nobody can emulate that, but I wanted to take the principles of how he built and ran programs. there's been hardly no one else in the college game better than building a program than the Holtzes. I mean, Skip's done a great job doing it. Lou's done a great job doing it. Now, sustaining it might be different, but building it, there's none better. He did it 6 times in college football, and I think that blueprint helped us have the success that we had at Cincinnati also.
Coach, it's been great hearing about your career and your thoughts on our program. And, man, you're a wealth of knowledge. The people you have worked with and coached with, it's just unbelievable.
What are you up to now, Coach?
Well, you know, after that debacle of the AAL folding, I thought I had a shot with Bob Stoops down at Dallas with the XFL, and that just kind of randomly fell through. And so right now, I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm just kind of hanging loose, trying to see what I can find, see if there's any type of perhaps off-the-field analytical-type positions or I was kind of interested in reading about your program there on the position they have Kurt Gall doing, right? I know Kurt.
Yeah.
You know, kind of getting involved as we get older, maybe getting involved and getting in touch with alumni, rallying those types of troops to get behind the program and become better donors and givers and those types of things. And yet, you know, keeping his hand in it a little bit with defensive analysis. But, you know, something like that would interest me, I would think. Staying in the game somehow. Really don't have any other passions other than football. You know, I live by myself. I'm a single guy. So now I have 2 grandchildren, so I'm spending tons of time with them up in Baltimore as my son works for the Ravens. And so I've just been traveling around since April the 2nd, you know, seeing family as much as I can because I've been so deprived of doing that through my years. But I still got gas in the tank and still have passion to wake up every day and be a part of something that's got great meaning and purpose.
Would you be interested in doing any TV, like for the Worldwide Leader or Box or any other channel?
Heck yeah. I'd love to get into television or anything like that, you know.
Yeah, especially with your wealth of knowledge and your personality. We've always followed your career and certainly enjoyed what you've done. And certainly with us being here on the podcast, guys, I think he would be a great candidate for television. There are certainly, I know, getting back in coaching business, as I've always heard, is like a very small fraternity. Everybody knows each other, and whether you want to or not. But certainly, I know that you'll land somewhere. And I guess right now is a good time to kind of catch your breath, right?
Yeah, I mean, I need to try to learn to smell the roses. I've always been an intense worker, a little bit of a grinder personality. It's just a hard when we got let go in April. All the coaching carousels probably had been filled, both college and professional.
Oh, yeah.
So you're kind of in this lull period. Everybody was headed toward vacation time and summer breaks and things like that. So there's not many jobs out there. And so the next cycle is going to start up in late November, December. And, I'd like to find something to do to spend that time if I could. But otherwise, if I don't, I'm just going to have to try to learn to relax a little bit. And I've got time. I have resources. I've got people to go see. I just need to try to enjoy life a little bit.
Well, Coach, we would love to have you in Greenville, that we have people in the Ward Building where the football offices are that are listening to our podcast. So, Coach is available.
Hey, let me know if I can help.
All right. Thank you so much, Coach, for coming on. And are you on certainly on social media where people can follow you?
Yeah. I've got a Facebook, and I've also got a Twitter. I've not been real active on Twitter since I left Florida Tech, but I need to start punching that in a little bit, I guess.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Coach. What an honor to have you on, and hopefully we can have you back on football season and maybe talk some football.
Sounds good. Appreciate you calling, guys.
Thanks, Rick.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Coach. Bye-bye. Thank you very much, Coach. What an honor to have him on the podcast. I remember I didn't talk about it in the interview, but guys, I'll tell you one thing. I remember, was it 98? It was late 90s. And the one thing, I've always hated playing Thursday night games. I'm not a Thursday night guy. Back at that time, it was cool because we were the only Thursday night. There was only one Thursday night game, period. So it was cool. We get the national spotlight. We had the deal from where Dave Hart is set up after the Peach Bowl with ESPN, and we play the Thursday night games. Great for exposure. Well, just a bit, the frustrating thing for me is just, I know Coach was talking about, that's why I brought it up, was those very things of the crazy schedules. And I'm just a traditionalist. I understand the TV, so I understand why the, you know, the poor Mac has to play on Tuesday nights and all that kind of crazy stuff. It's not good for the players. I know why we do it. It's exposure.
You know, I don't mind it if it's limited. I don't mind like we're doing this year, one Thursday night game, that's fine. But towards the end of our Conference USA run, not the very end, but just before, when we were still with ESPN, before they switched to Fox Sports Net again and CBS Sports Network, it had gotten out of hand. Do you guys remember that around like the end of the Holt era where it was Tuesday night, Thursday night, Sunday night?
Yeah, it was all
Sunday night game against UCF and against Tulsa.
And Bubba, I want to ask you, being a former player, I know that being at Avery University, but it's like that, I mean, but East Carolina, I mean, no matter what level you're playing on, doesn't that, I mean, how bad does that affect you as far as you're playing in? Football is not, it's a contact sport. You've got to have time to recover. How bad is it if you were have a game, say, on a Saturday, and then you got to turn around and play a Tuesday or Thursday night game?
Well, it affects a lot of different areas. It affects your amount of preparation. So in addition to that, it affects recovery, like you mentioned. And then also with the shorter week and just with the things that are going on as a college student, you obviously you have that as well. And then obviously if you have a game where you have to go on the road on a short turnaround, then it's all the more trying. That's what at the level I was playing at, obviously not playing televised games, we didn't have to worry about it. Our games were strictly on Saturdays, but yeah, that's certainly one of the things that as a Division One athlete, particularly in certain conferences that like the MAC, where you have a lot of Tuesday and Wednesday games, it can definitely be a challenge, to say the least.
You know, one thing the MAC does do in November, I think, you guys might want to double check with me on this, but I think in November they actually do all weeknight games, so at least the schedules get consistent. You're playing from Tuesday to Tuesday or Tuesday to Wednesday,
right.
Wednesday to Thursday.
Right.
At least you're not getting a bunch of short weeks in there.
Well, that'll be that's a good point. And that another thing that comes to mind too. What do you guys think about? I've never asked Gil, but. With the guys out in the Pac-12, we have to have Mike M back on. We'll have him on soon. But what do you think about a lot of times they feel like that they're, because of their being the time zone out there, that they get left out? Do you guys think they should do, is there anything creative they could do to?
Dave, they're talking about that, dude. Did you know that, or are you just bringing that up? I didn't read the article, but there was an article that the Pac-12 was looking in to AM kickoffs.
Well, they were. Well, the reason I brought that up is I've heard rumblings, not recently, but they're trying to figure out ways that they can be more, I guess the word is relevant, but I haven't heard it recently, but I've heard
it. Yeah, it was an article the other day. I didn't read it. It can be found online, I'm sure, where they're exploring doing kickoffs earlier in the day to get more exposure on the East Coast. So,
well, guys, here in the coming weeks, we'll have Mike Yim from the Pac-12 Network on, so that'll be an excellent topic to broach with him.
But you know, I don't know if that's their problem. I mean, because
I think it's product on the field, wouldn't you say?
If they're going to unless they think it's a recruiting issue, but I don't know that fixes the problem because they're going to recruit kids from that same area. They're not going to start recruiting in North Carolina and Georgia. They're going to recruit out west, maybe as far east as Texas.
Right.
I think there's too much parity out there. I don't know what's
right.
going on with that. I think part of their problem is that they're elite programs. They got bad coaches.
They don't have that right. They need the traditional suspects to be good, and they just don't have.
No, Coach Helton is out at USC,
USC,
and he's not very good. You look at Oregon. It'll be yet to be determined what Mario Cristobal is going to do, but he certainly seems like an odd fit. Chip Kelly at UCLA is just in year number two. There's just some odd hire. You know, Arizona State, you got, what's his name?
Herm Edwards.
You know, Herm Edwards is Arizona State. He's 150 years old, been out of coaching 440 years.
They say he's doing a good
years.
Job, what I'm hearing, though. As far as
yeah, I hear people say that. They won six games last year, right? I mean, I don't know what such a great job he did. We'll see.
But, yeah, you're right. And another point that needs to be made about one of the flagship programs, you'd have to argue with USC, going back to them real quick, is how many – I mean, they were talking about – I heard this on – I think it was on ESPN Radio recently, or it's been maybe a while back, I can't remember. But look how many coaches that have been at USC in the last handful – what is it, four? It's a handful of coaches. You had the – Lane Kiffin, he was fired during the season. Then you had one of Kyle's favorite coaches, Ogeron, right? Was there? Did he fill in for him?
Yeah, you had Ogeron filling in for Kiffin. Before Kiff, you had
and then Sarkisian, he had the drunk.
Yeah, before Kiff. So yeah, Sarkisian, Kiffin, Ed Ogeron, and now
and Helton.
Helton. So yeah.
So that's a bad recipe right there for.
Yeah, and you know, to be honest with you, I don't like any of those hires. Every one of those coaches, with maybe the exception being Sarkisian,
he just had the personal problems. I think he was doing.
Right.
I think he was going to be good.
I really didn't like. I don't like any of those hires. So it'll be interesting to see. Helton's on the hot seat big time this year. I think anything less than double digit wins, he's gone.
They have to, right? I mean,
and they. I think they'll target Urban Meyer.
Hey, there's an interesting. Well, I didn't even thought about that. That's a good
to see if he'll come out of retirement again. And I'll tell you, somebody else they may target is Bob Stoops.
Wow,
I think they're going to go after a big name this time. And
they have to, don't they?
I certainly would think so. Yeah, I think they're going to target those two guys are either. Whoever the hottest up-and-coming young coach will be at the end of this season.
I have a coach.
Absolutely. Make those two say no for sure.
Yes.
I have a coach for you. Your favorite coach for Kyle Barber's favorite coach, Willie Taggart. I think he'll be in the mix.
That's not my favorite coach. My favorite coach.
I know. I'm going to be Chris Creighton.
You don't like Taggart. I tell you what, you know, my boy Chris Creighton, who is my favorite coach at Eastern Michigan, I've been singing his praises for 4 years now. It's starting to get some national attention. They were talking about him on SiriusXM Satellite Radio Full Ride with Chris Childers and Rick Neuheisel. We're talking about Chris Creighton and the job he's done at Eastern Michigan. So Phil Steele was also singing his praises in the Phil Steele magazine. So I was about 4 years ahead of all these experts. You just keep that in mind, guys. To toot my own horn. Toot.
There you go. Toot, toot. Well, I tell you what, it's going to be really interesting to see. We will have to have Mike Yam back on because you're right about that, Kyle. You could actually make an argument, and people will have to ask him, but he probably would disagree with us because he works for the Pac-12 Network. But wouldn't you say, don't you think, when you were talking about ACC, can you not see that if you had some kind of – you can't have it, I know, because they do it in basketball. But can't you see if we had an American – just hypothetically speaking, you have an American versus Pac-12. There's a lot of teams we could beat. Our conference members could beat the Pac-12, don't you think?
Well, I'll tell you what, UCLA opens up on a few weeks from now, or about a month from now, on a Thursday night, the first Thursday of college football season, whatever the date is for that. What is that, 27th?
The 27th. No, I'm sorry, the 29th.
So UCLA at Cincinnati. So that'll be a fun one to watch that Thursday.
Yeah, there you go, there, sir. That would be the American Pac-12 challenge, so to speak. And That's where Commissioner Oresko, I'm sure, is. We have to play those games, and not only play those games, you have to win those games. I remember when I had Paul Feinbaum on my show. Your favorite person there, Kyle. Another favorite person.
I can't stand him.
I love Paul Feinbaum. I know he's an acquired taste, but I asked him about
he's
as far
an idiot.
As East Carolina, and back then we were winning, so this was the rough era when I had him on.
I didn't know who the hell East Carolina was. Paul Feinbaum don't know anything that didn't happen.
Kyle has an F-bomb for F-bomb.
Do what now?
I said Kyle has an F-bomb for F-bomb.
He's a gimmick. He's a gimmick, and look, some people would say I'm a gimmick. But he in wrestling, it's called a gimmick, and that's what he is. He got over by being over the top, by having a bunch of Alabama rednecks calling his show.
I love his. You don't love his show?
Ah, screw that piece of trash.
I love his show.
He's Jerry Springer of the college football world.
I love it,
I've got no use for Paul Feinbaum. He's disrespectful to anybody that isn't in the SEC. You think he would treat East Carolina with any kind of respect? Screw that guy.
Well,
I'll tell you what, he needs to get off TV because he's got a face for radio.
I love it because the fans call in, and some of them are so stupid. But then you have other fans call in, and I just like the rub. I think it's entertaining. I really do. I listen to it.
Let's have him on the show and play that clip for him and see what he has to say to me.
Will you go head-to-head with Paul Feinbaum?
I'll go head-to-head with Paul Feinbaum any way he wants to go head-to-head.
Hey, Bubba. You and I work on the scheduling. Let's see if we can get Paul. I've got a connection. I can get Paul Feinbaum on the show if you want.
He don't want any. He don't want. Let's talk anything besides SEC football. Anything besides SEC football. Let's see how well he can break down the Sun Belt. He wouldn't be in a lot yet from Troy.
Well, that's why he is. Well, that's why he's on the SEC network. And that's why they have, I mean, he's an SEC expert, being in the, he had a show in Birmingham. Well, we have to, I mean, I'm not saying he, I know people that work with him. I'm not saying he's the nicest guy in the world.
Give me Tim Brando all day over Paul Feinbaum.
Hey, I love Tim Brando.
Yeah, I mean, Timmy B, the guy who did a radio show for years, knew how to do it, did it right. Was an SEC guy. For years and years, got and you know I don't know what happened there, but
he's a yellow shoe guy.
I'll just tell you this, and I don't know if it had anything to do with it, but he spoke out vehemently against Bear Bryant Jr. and what happened with those guys in UAB, and I mean spoke out hardcore against it while the other guys in the SEC and the SEC media were just sitting there twiddling their thumbs, and it was right after that he was no longer employed by CBS. And started calling Pac-12 and Big 12 games on FS1. And I don't know if anything had to do with anything, but it sure was interesting timing.
Well, that might be a spin, but he wanted to. One thing is that his passion is calling games, and CBS was not given the opportunity. He was a studio host, which there's not anything wrong with that, but he wanted to call games. Yeah, he wanted to call games, and so there might have been I don't disagree with you. I know that I remember exactly what you're talking about, and I loved his TV show. I thought, well, it was basically the radio show on TV. But, I mean, no offense to CBS Network, but I thought he was one of the best things on CBS Network, and I'm a huge
Tim
Brando
fan. On CBS Sports Network, yes.
That's what I meant.
In terms of their CBS Sports Network, you know, I actually, you know, during football season, you know, the Tim Brando show when it was on, and Inside College Football,
that's a good one.
Is really good.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it the last couple of seasons very much because, well, obvious reasons. But when we're competitive or winning, I always enjoyed that show. Just talking about CBS Sports Network and some of the content they put out. I think Inside College, I believe that's the name of that show, guys. Inside College Football, does that sound right? Their midweek college football show during the season on CBS Sports Network. I always thought it was far superior to anything that ESPN was doing.
The only thing I've watched, the only thing I don't watch a lot of those shows. The only ones I knew were the ones with Tim Brando and then in the college football. I saw that I haven't watched in a few years, but Certainly, those are. I think the reason why. I think I don't know about you guys, but we were talking about this before with SportsCenter. SportsCenter used to be so magical because it was like the one show that you could see the highlights and different things about sports. And it just seems like now, with the technology, having the internet, with apps on your phone, and you have crazy podcasts like the Sports Objective, you have all this information out there. It sometimes it can be overwhelming. I mean, I could literally watch 24 hours of college, especially, oh my God, ESPN wouldn't have any programming if they had stuff not about the NFL. I mean, I love them, but I love the NFL, but my God, it seems to be a little bit oversaturated, in my opinion.
Well, it's the number one sport in America.
Oh, I know that.
So, I mean,
I know why they do it. I'm just saying.
You're right. I get what you're saying.
It's like, it's almost like the NFL Network, but it's ESPN. And
right.
For me, when you guys were toddlers, and I guess I was probably a teenager or what about that point, but when they had, when they used to have real sports on, they used to have like, well, speaking of real sports, this is not a good example, but I used to love when they had, after school, they would have AWA wrestling. They would have all these different sports you normally wouldn't see. And I know it's all about ratings. I understand why they do it, but I just love the one thing. That's one of the things I love about the ESPN app so much is all the niche sports that we used to watch as kids. They're starting to bring back that kind of stuff on the app, and it's only, what, $5 a month, so.
Right, yeah, the ESPN Plus app.
Yeah.
There's a lot of content up there, and you don't have to watch 24 hours of NFL coverage.
Lot, much better. By the way, guys, I want to remind folks that we're going to have our good friend Dana Schrenk from Dana's Global Travel. She's going to be talking about, we'll have her on this week, talking about the Pirate Cruise. It's a Sports Objective Pirate Cruise coming up next July. You can go ahead and give her a call, 919-830-4161, 919-830-4161. We want you cruising, and we're going to try to find a way to throw Bubba on the ship, too. I think if we tell Stacy, I think he hasn't told Stacy about the cruise. What do you think, Bubba? I mean, Kyle?
I don't think he told her. Yeah, I think Bubba's trying to think of excuses not to do the cruise for whatever reason. And he knows he tells Stacy. Stacy's gonna want to take a lovely cruise to the Bahamas. So I'm gonna send Stacy a message on Facebook and let her know about the cruise, and that Bubba is Maybe I'll try this gimmick. I'll tell Stacy that he's scared that she's gonna get, with all the involvement he has with East Carolina, a pirate cruise. Might be pushing it over the edge because he's scared to mention it to her. So on his behalf, I'm reaching out to her.
Is that true, Bubba?
No.
Okay, it's not true. Okay. I know you have the coaching clinic around that time. It's the middle of July next year, but we want to do that because by the time, if we did it in August, there's back to school, there's all that we've got to cover. Obviously, football is huge in East Carolina, for people that didn't know, that maybe have never listened to our podcast. So football season is in full swing by that point, with fall camp and beyond, right before the season starts. So we felt like it would be a good idea to have in July. It's kind of some downtime and time for all of us to get together. And we're hoping that we can get some former players on. And there's some that expressed interest when we told them privately, I know, several months ago, so we'll have to see if that comes true. But, like, do you think Ryan Robinson, he's going to be a guest this week, do you think maybe we could get him and John Gilbert on? And maybe, well, I'm going to talk to our friend Philip Wood at the Pirate Club, maybe some folks like that on there as well. What do you think?
That would be awesome if we can just, you know, I think Mike Houston, that's what we're going to reach out for, shoot for the top. He went on a Disney cruise last year, so maybe this year he'll do a little pirate cruising. But, you know, I don't know, maybe he wants to get away from all of us.
Get rid of these damn people. That's a good point. But we're going, for folks that don't know, we're going to go from Charleston to the Bahamas next year. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to have my family. Kyle's going to be there. We're going to twist Bubba's arm. And Stacy, I'm sure, will tell him go ahead and just sign up, and we'll figure it out. It's a year away. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, it's Charleston. I think the departure date is July 16th,
yeah.
I believe, Dave. That's on a Thursday. And so we'd be cruising Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we'll arrive back on Monday. And go down, like Dave said.
Wednesday.
The plan will be for me and my wife to go down on Wednesday, enjoy a little dinner in Charleston, do a little walking around the historic downtown Charleston on Thursday.
Which is gorgeous.
Yes, it is. And then hit through the harbor and get ready to go to the Bahamas. Bubba, you got to come, man. You got to come. I want to see drunk Bubba. Me and Bubba.
No, I can assure you, you would not see that. But
we will not see drunk Bubba? Oh, come on, man.
Well, whatever you do, I'm not trying to make light of this. Whatever you do right now, guys, a serious topic. Please don't be drinking alcoholic beverages, definitely off the ship, for sure. A lot of craziness in Puerto Rico and, definitely the Dominican Republic.
We won't be in Puerto Rico or the Dominican. We're going to be in the Bahamas.
Yes. So we're gonna have fun. I realize, I'm just saying, there's been a lot of, there was another country that come to me in just a little bit, but that they had to throw a whole bunch of alcohol away that was not good. So I think we're going to find out more about that. But I will tell you, Nassau is very beautiful. The great thing is you can, for people who've never been on a cruise, you can go on excursions where they have a lot of cool activities you can do off the ship. You can be like me and Kyle. We're going to be chilling on the boat. Maybe Bubba will be too. And we're just going to say, you know what? We're not going to get off the boat. We're going to hang out on the boat.
Speak for yourself, my friend.
I knew I'd get a reaction out of you.
I'm going snorkeling. My fat ass is going snorkeling.
All right, there you go. Bubba, is there an activity? Would you like to swim with the dolphins or sea lions or anything?
He's such a baby, the dolphins make him cry.
Are you there, Bubba?
Bubba said enough of this.
All right, yeah, exactly. But anyway, folks, again, call Dana. Before we go, I just want to mention again, call her at 919-830-4161. Google Dana's Global Travel, and you find out more information. And she knows about, obviously, she's going to come on the podcast this week. So she's very excited because Kyle, me, our family, I think, has 5 cabins. And then Kyle, I know your sister's coming. And my sister, so it's kind of a reunion for our 2 sisters. That's how we know each other.
Correct.
Heather and Amy are sisters. So I know, I'm sure her husband's coming as well.
Yes. I'm quite sure. Last I spoke with Heather, they were planning on coming, and I need to check to see if she's made a reservation. I need to make my reservation.
Yeah, I need to make my reservation. I'm making it this week, so I haven't put it off. I knew I had to wait till Thursday at the end of this week, so we'll definitely do it. Please, folks, make sure you sign up because I'm telling you, it's going to be a lot of fun. And let me tell you something. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast, Kyle, so I want to mention this, and then I promise we'll wrap things up.
Longest podcast ever.
It is. I talked to Dana, and you can actually right now, if say that you want to hold your spot, per se, and you're like, Dave, my money's kind of tight right now. We've had summer vacation. We get it. So here, check this deal out, Kyle. If you want to be a part of the Sports Objective podcast group, if you will, for the Pirate Cruise, just let her know that right now, can you put me down? I will save my spot for $25 per person. That's dirt cheap, $25 per person. That money will be applied when you can actually pay. I think it may be around, I'm going to guess, $100 a person for a deposit, something like that, which is dirt
probably
cheap.
Typically, with any kind of deposit, it's 5% or 10%. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but that's typically what it is.
Yeah, and somewhere around there, that's right, Kyle. And but if you say that maybe your money's a little tight right now, $25 per person is dirt cheap to save your spot on the Sports Objective Pirate Cruise. I'm so excited. Call her again, Dana, at 919-830-4161. And it's going to be a lot of fun next July. Well, Kyle, before we go, I know a lot of people listen to the podcast, but there's different ways. But also, one of the big things we love to talk about is social media.
Yeah, follow us on Facebook. No, that's not right. Follow us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook. Just search Facebook for the Sports Objective and then like our page. Go on Twitter. Follow us at the Sports OBJ. And we're also on Instagram. I believe that's also at the Sports OBJ on Instagram. and follow us, like us. We also check out our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube. It's the Sports Objective YouTube channel. Go like our YouTube channel, and of course you can listen where you're listening now. But one of the easiest places to find us besides SoundCloud is TuneIn. All Pirate fans have the TuneIn Radio app for the Pirates IMG Network. So if you got the TuneIn app, let your friends know that if they have that app, they have the Sports Objective.
We're pretty much everywhere, especially the major platforms, and with Apple, Google, you name it, we're there. You're talking about TuneIn. There's iHeart. We worked really hard. I know Kyle remembers when we first started the podcast. You were on the second episode, and we worked really hard to make sure. And whenever we find out a different place, we're always adding to that for distribution. So anyway, folks, we're going to get out of here. Thank you to Coach Rick Minner. Appreciate him very much for coming on the podcast. He was tremendous. I want to thank Bubba Rosenbaum and Kyle from LaGrange Barber. Until next time, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.